From the Atlantic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we're pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. And yes, I have a wild story to share with all of you. This hour of the program, you're going to be hearing this for the first time in full length. I also want to remind you now, this show, as usual, is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. I want to make sure you have their number, 828-298-5402, 828-298-5402. Of course, we have Sam the Animal still in the studio, along with Miss Shelley Wright. And last hour, I mentioned that, last year, Shelley was one of the folks on an expedition here to Puerto Rico who got to check out what they call the extraterrestrial highway here. It's Route 303. There is even an official sign put up by the city of Lajas, Puerto Rico, on the side of the road, designating it as the extraterrestrial highway. And that's because primarily of an incident that occurred in 1997. Now, granted, there have been many, many, many UFO sightings at this location over the years. It's this area in Lajas around a lagoon, actually, called the Laguna Cartagena. And it was purchased in the 80s by the federal government and is now a federal wildlife preserve. There are all kinds of odd stories locals will tell you about that part of Puerto Rico, about how that the government came in, bought the land, started doing some kind of construction, and for a while the lagoon drained of all water, and then it was full of water again, and they claimed that there was an underground base of some kind there. Additionally, it is no secret to anybody that there is a military base nearby, because on days here in Puerto Rico, when the weather is nice, you can look outside and see a huge white blimp up in the air over top of this base. It's called the Aerostat, and they claim that the Aerostat is equipped with instruments to view the sea and the ocean and search for drug smugglers and unauthorized boats. But most people feel that it's a bit much for mere coincidence that this has all now appeared at this area where UFO sightings have been taking place for at least 80 to 100 years. And I know that because I've talked to people who are between 80 and 100 years old who've lived here their whole lives and said, you know, there have always been weird craft and weird lights flying around this lagoon. So let's go back in time, shall we, to May 5th, that would be Cinco de Mayo, of 1997. Next month, that will be 18 years ago. There is a house right off of Route 303, now known as the Extraterrestrial Highway, owned by a man named Francesco Negron. And on that day, at approximately 7 p.m., Señor Negron was in his kitchen. Actually, he was sort of going in and out of the kitchen area, working on a tiling project. And he couldn't help but notice, right there around 7, this big, bright, blinding red ball of light plummeting from the sky down toward the mountains behind his house, his own private property. Now, these mountains are actually between Route 303 and the Laguna Cartagena. So this would be the ideal, you know, spot for something strange to come from the sky. This red light comes falling to Earth And when it crashed on top of the mountain behind his house, there was an ear-shattering boom. A very scary experience. Well, he thought maybe an airplane had crashed or, you know, something like that, and immediately got in touch with the authorities. And while he was talking with the authorities, that's when he also realized that now the whole top of his mountain was on fire. So within a very short period of time, there were firemen on the scene, there were policemen on the scene, and then, not long afterward, all kinds of other strange and interesting government agents from various departments flooded the scene, keeping the public at bay, cordoning off the area. They were on top of the mountain working on the fire, but he said there were also what appeared to be black helicopters flying around, shining down spotlights. As a matter of fact, as a side note, over the following days, black helicopters would continue appearing with various instrument packs over top of this mountain. So they got the fire put out successfully. And that night, you know, he's asking anybody he can get access to, well, what the heck happened? And everybody keeps saying, we don't know yet, we don't know, we don't know. And they won't let him go up there or anybody else go up there. So a couple days later, they told him finally that since it was his property, he could go up there if he wanted to. Now, in the meantime, there had been government agents going in and out. And some of those people were also scientists from various universities. And every time a wave of scientists would come down, he would say, what do you think? Was this a meteorite? They would say, nope, it wasn't a meteorite. Well, what was it? Well, we don't know, but there are traces of radiation up there, and so, you know, you should probably be very careful, stay away from it for a while. Was this an aircraft that crashed? Nope, wasn't that. I mean, every time he asked a question, all he was told was there's no explanation, we don't know. So finally, when he was able to go up there, and it takes you about an hour from his house to hike up there if you have a clear path. Now, the path, of course, can be very overgrown. There are some extremely dense, thorny bushes around there that you have to sort of hack your way through with a machete. I don't know how clear the path was at that time. But when he finally was able to go up there and view this area on his own land, he said at the top of the mountain, there was sort of a depression where this thing had crashed, but certainly not a crater. And in fact, a number of scientists have said that if this had been some kind of a meteorite that did crash that caused this effect, it would have probably obliterated the entire town. That's how powerful that impact would have been. So it certainly wasn't a meteorite. All the experts said, you know, not an aircraft. So what was it? Well, he went up there and saw that not only was there this depression where it had hit, but that the heat was so intense that cactuses around the area looked like they had been melted. And furthermore, many of the cactuses were covered with what looked like some kind of melted blue substance. Obviously, he didn't want to touch it. He knew that there was supposedly some radiation up there. He has no idea what this blue substance was. He also said that the barbed wire of his fences was melted. And so the heat from whatever this thing was absolutely intense. Well, the scientists came for days and days and days, and then they finally, you know, sort of disappeared. At that time, all of these thousands of curiosity seekers from all around Puerto Rico started flooding his property and asking if they could go up there. And he did start letting some people go up and check it out. But on the other hand, he said there were other people who were just sneaking onto his property and trespassing. So it got to the point where he realized, I just have to create a strict rule. Nobody can come on my property anymore. He said he has a friend who's a lawyer, and the lawyer said, yeah, you know, you got to keep people away. This is a liability. So he just sort of shut down access altogether. However, it was the mayor of Lajas, that township nearby, who felt that what happened there was so significant that it was finally time to designate that highway as the extraterrestrial highway. Everybody says the mayor was a bit of a showman, and whether or not that's a good idea or a bad idea, that remains controversial to this day. So he closed off access to this property, and that's how it's been for years. I won't tell you precisely how all this came together, but last week, due to some very fortuitous circumstances, I was able to meet Mr. Negron. I don't know how old he is, frankly, because he's an older guy, but here in Puerto Rico, people look a lot younger than they are. It's the whole fountain of youth thing. But he was a nice man, and he told me, he said, look, I don't do interviews, but he would talk to me. And so I started asking him questions, and we sort of hit it off, I guess, because he finally told me, after he understood the seriousness with which I approach these things, that he would allow me and my friend Ellis, who is a tour guide in Puerto Rico as well, to go up there to this site as long as we had an authorized person with us to guide us. Because he said, you can go up there and get lost. He said, people have gone up there and gotten lost many times. And so he made arrangements for his grandson, who is now, I think, 30 years old, to take me and Ellis up to this site. We were dealing with weather issues because there's been a lot of rain here recently. And if you get up there on top of a mountain and one of these downpours occurs, well, there, you know, it's very dangerous with lightning striking all around you. So I knew that this was a special occasion and it might be my only opportunity to ever go to this site. So I got all my best instrumentation together, all my goodies, and we planned this very elaborate trek to go up there and to measure as many things as possible at this site. We're coming up on a break here. When we come back, I will tell you about the specific instruments that I used and what that I saw with my own two eyes when I got up there to this historic UFO crash site. And not only what I saw and what the results of my measurements were, but I'm going to tell you about the physical evidence that I was able to obtain. This is the program where the unusual becomes usual, brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. And if you go to speakingofstrange.com, you'll even find a link to Wright's Coin Shop. Stick around for the rest of this story. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange.
Oh, so you think you can tell heaven from hell?
Strangers in the night, exchanging glances, wondering in the night, what were the chances we'd be sharing love before the night was through? Something in your eyes was so inviting, something in your smile was so exciting, something in my heart told me I must have you. Strangers in the night, two lonely people, we were strangers in the night, up to the moment when we said our first hello, little did we know. Love was just a glance away, a warm embracing dance away. And ever since that night, we've been together, lovers at first sight. In love forever, it turned out so right. for strangers in the night.
Yes, it's the show where the unusual becomes usual, where strangers from around the world come together to share in true, honest, groundbreaking information about how vast and remarkable and weird this world is that we live in. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange. The show is presented by Wright's Coin Shop, and you may call them at 828-298-5402. Anywhere you are in the country, 828-298-5402. Now, also, I implore you, if you haven't already, to go check out the new design for joshuapwarren.com, because if you go to joshuapwarren.com, you will find a whole section called Gallery of the Strange, and I have the world's wildest ghost photos there. I have UFO and USO images that nobody else has got, a section on psychic phenomena. I mean, I know that you want to see it to believe it, so I've got really good visuals. And there's also a curiosity shop there that I think you'll find quite intriguing. So do yourself a favor and go to joshuapwarren.com. There is no period after the P. We're talking right now about my experience yesterday investigating the site of a UFO crash here in southwestern Puerto Rico. Right in the heart of the Bermuda Triangle. It happened on May 5th of 1997, almost 18 years ago. So, you know, Mr. Negron's grandson, who's 30 years old, he also operates a company that takes people on tours. And he said that a lot of times they'll go snorkeling in some of these areas not far from what people claim is an underwater base, and he said that when you put your head under the water, you can hear this sound like a ping, 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 and nobody knows what it is. It's obviously something coming from that base or a submarine or something like that. I'm planning to go there with an underwater microphone to see if I can capture that, but obviously, radio program, I like sound, so we'll play it for you. Well, in order for us to start out with our expedition, I put together a backpack of some of my best instruments, knowing this may be my only chance to go up there to this site. Here's what I included in my rather heavy backpack. I had, of course, a standard video camera. I also had a high-definition digital 3D camera capable of capturing stills and video. I had a Geiger counter so that I could measure X-rays, alpha, beta, and gamma. I had two tri-field meters, Model 1 and Model 2, so I could detect electric fields, magnetic fields, electromagnetic fields, radio waves, microwaves. The Model 2 even has an antenna, so I can pick up things on a just insanely sensitive small scale. I had an electrostatic field meter, a Dr. Gauss EMF meter. I had a metal detector, temperature gauge.
How big was this backpack?
I kind of feel like a smuggler now, Sam.
Did you have a Sherpa?
Now that I think about it, I can understand how this woman fit, like, you know, 5 lemurs and 10 monkeys and 50 snakes and all that into her suitcase. I'm leaving stuff out. You know, I had magnifying lenses, I had binoculars, I had survival stuff in there. You know, I had, you know, like a matches and water, of course, lots of water, and I don't even remember all the stuff, but it took me, you know, a couple of days to make sure I had, like, the perfect pack for this trip. So, we get together, my friend Ellis and myself here, with Gabby, who is Senor Negron's grandson, who's to be our guide. We parked the car there on the property, and we began the hike up the mountain on this very rugged, steep trail. Again, covered with a lot of very thorny bushes. We did, you know, spill a little bit of blood, but, you know, nothing too serious. I've had worse experiences. Once we started getting closer and closer to the site where the crash occurred, I started seeing the outer rings of damage. Now, mind you, we're talking about still a site that, you know, even though it's not nearly as contaminated as, say, the Roswell site, still a site where something happened 18 years ago. And there has been an enormous amount of tropical rainfall since then, and there were big ruts on that mountain. So I knew that a lot of the evidence would be washed away. I would say probably 99% of it would be washed away. But I was just there to see if I could find that 1%, especially with my equipment and my experience. So as we got closer, we finally started seeing the outer rungs of the damage, and until we got right up to the central area. And it's still, you know, much more overgrown than I would like. But there was a clearing there. They said that stuff just doesn't grow there properly since the accident happened when you get right around the sort of up epicenter of the crash. As you start getting closer to the spot, the first thing you notice is rocks all over the place that are charred black. So it's very obvious that whatever happened was extreme. Because, you know, 18 years later, for these rocks still to look just as black as if they had been in the middle of a fire yesterday is pretty pronounced. So there are charred black rocks everywhere. And then we got right up, as we started getting closer and closer, you started seeing how warped and weird to this day the cactuses are. And, in fact, when I got up there and I started taking measurements, I have to be honest with you. I was not able to measure anything anomalous. I didn't pick up any radiation. There were no weird electromagnetic fields. The electrostatic was normal. I didn't measure anything that was weird in the energy realm. I was really hoping I'd get some radioactivity because, you know, there would be no reason that you could explain some conventional craft creating that. I didn't get it, but I wasn't surprised because after 18 years, rain would take any kind of radioactive powder and substance and probably wash it down and bury it under several feet of mud at the base, the very concealed base of some of these mountains. So I wasn't that surprised I didn't get anything like that. I didn't see any of this blue material. That was all gone. But what I did do was I collected a number of these rocks that are charred black. And as I was walking around, it's kind of funny because at one point I reached down and I picked up a mask that had been there for a long time. I got this on video. It kind of looked like a painter's mask. And there's no reason whatsoever a mask should be up there in the brush. It's probably a mask from the original incident. It was all, you know, nasty looking. At first, I thought it was just a piece of trash. But here is the thing that I attained that is my favorite thing. I was able to find this one cactus, because there's this ring of cactuses that's pretty much like it's close to the crash site where they still grow. It's like if you get right to the crash site, then there are no cactuses. But right when you get to that first ring where they're still growing, there was a cactus there that had an arm on it, if you will, that I believe tells the whole story. Cactuses can live 200 years or so. And when you look at this one arm of this cactus, you can literally see the moment when the crash happened 20 years ago. There's this spot on the cactus. Well, I tell you what, let's take a break. When we come back, I'll tell you what I'm talking about here, what it looks like to look back, you know, almost 20 years and see the moment when this crash occurred in the growth of this. And then I'm going to tell you something that I think sort of snaps this whole story into a new perspective. There's some relevance here. I'm still struggling with figuring it out. Maybe all of you will have some ideas. And talking about my experience investigating a UFO crash site yesterday here in Puerto Rico. Tonight's program is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. Stick around for the rest of this story. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange. Imagine the excitement of trekking off through the wilderness in exotic Puerto Rico, heading toward a site where a UFO crashed. I had a machete in my hand, hacking my way through the thorns and brush, and I'm telling you, this is not some kind of urban legend. This is not some BS that locals talk about after they've had too many medallions and rum. No. Something real. Something unidentified. Something flying. An object crashed there. The military came. Helicopter scanning the ground. And when you can look back in time and see what happened, it gives you a chill. And that is exactly what happened to me when I went to that spot and I saw the remnants of that moment. Think about this man. He didn't know, Señor Negron, that day, as he was working on the tiling in his kitchen, that night something was going to come from outer space onto his property, and that his life would never be the same.
Or that cactus.
That's right. And it could happen to you, Sam. It could happen to you, Shelley. It could happen to anyone listening to this program. Tomorrow, when you wake up and you roll out of bed, you may not feel 100%. But you have no idea that something huge is about to happen in your life, and it's going to change forever. And sometimes huge things happen because we work for them, and we set all the conditions in motion, and we pray, and we try to plan, and we try to send out good energy. And then there are times when things happen that just, it's just like a lightning strike coming down from the sky. I would love to be able to look into a crystal ball and to see exactly what happened on top of that mountain almost 18 years ago. I can't do that, but I'll tell you what the closest thing was. This cactus. Now, this was not the only one. There were a number of cactuses like this, but this particular cactus was a beautiful example. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren, telling a story about investigating this UFO crash site here in Puerto Rico. It's presented to you by Wright's Coin Shop, this show tonight. This cactus has an arm on it. And now, mind you, a cactus can live hundreds of years. And what you see when you look at the arm of this cactus is that there is a section that looks gray and burned and melted and dead. And then, right on top of that, is this very distinct demarcation. on top of which is 18 years of new growth. Now, mind you, it's not the healthiest looking new growth, and that's not surprising. There have also been some cactus blights and things like that in the area, which it makes it kind of tricky for some of these cactuses to be healthy in general. But when you look at this, what you can apparently see is that moment when that UFO crashed. To me, it's kind of like looking at the rings of a tree. And, you know, you can go back in time and count the rings and say, well, this is when George Washington was born. You know, this is when we dropped the atomic bomb, et cetera, et cetera. Well, here, it's as different as night and day. This is before the thing crashed right here. This is after. And it's sort of nature's way of freezing this moment in time. I shot video of that. And I took pictures of it, and I thought to myself, man, I would love to have that arm and that cactus. But it almost seemed impossible. Like, I didn't even want to ask if it was okay to cut this and take it, because it just seemed like such a beautiful thing. I didn't want to disturb it, you know? But then I realized, hey, if I don't do this, if I don't take this, then maybe, what's going to happen? I mean, probably nobody better qualified is going to come up here and get access and do this. And it's probably just going to disappear, and maybe we'll never know anything. So I asked Gabby, I said, Gabby, is it okay if I take some physical samples here to be tested in legitimate laboratories? And he said, absolutely. So, I, of course, I took some of these charred rocks, but I said, I'd really like to have that arm of that cactus that shows when the crash happened. And he said, I know that you'll do the right thing with it. Take it. So, I took out my machete, and I whacked the arm off that cactus. Sorry, cactus. It was for the good of all mankind. And very carefully put it in a bag, and I now have in my possession this perfect, beautiful, natural illustration of what happened. If you go to speakingofstrange.com, you will see a photograph of the cactus arm. You'll see before and after, as well as a picture of some of the rocks. I am going to try to figure out how to have these things properly tested. I don't know anybody who's a cactus expert, so I'm putting a plea out there to all of you listening to this show. If any of you have expertise in analyzing cactuses and whatnot, send me your recommendations. I've got to be very particular about who gets a hold of this. Same thing goes for the rocks. But my plan is, once they're analyzed, to also have them available on display in the Asheville Mystery Museum for the event I'm doing on July 19th. And I told you, you can find info on that at joshuapwarren.com. Before I continue, Sam, you have seen this picture. What is your opinion of this photo?
The cactus one?
Yes.
It appears to be a felled cactus, a Norman felled cactus, and it looks to be burned. It has sustained some trauma. And then growing out a protuberance, if you would, of the tip is a newer section of cactus, which is more green, more like you would assume a cactus to be. But it's kind of laying on the ground, like it got knocked down by a strong force, explosion.
Like a machete.
Well, is that after you chopped it down?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes. Well,
it was a strong force. It was the power of the JP Dubs. I took a lot of pictures of it before I chopped it. You know, I have video footage and I have stills of it there on the plant. But that particular picture is a picture of it after I've chopped it, and it's actually lying there on the ground next to my instrument pack. So I was getting some really nice close-ups of it. Now listen to this though, guys. I have this evidence now, which is going to be processed. I'll let you all know how this turns out. But here's what I think is maybe the kicker to some degree. It turns out that after conferring with Señor Negron and other geologists that I know in the area, that mountain, that particular mountain, is apparently the very first land that rose from the sea hundreds of millions of years ago in the Caribbean. He told me that long before this even happened, scientists, geologists had been going up to that mountain anyway and studying it for rock formations. In fact, on the mountain you also find a seismograph that scientists had put up there long ago to keep tabs on earthquakes. So what are the chances that this UFO, of all places, would crash on the peak of this mountain that is not only the oldest mountain in Puerto Rico, but is also the oldest in the Caribbean, the very first spot of land that rose from the sea? Now, when I say that, here, let me just give you what my opinion on this. There are people who believe that these aliens have been visiting us for millions of years. Maybe even time is irrelevant to them because they can travel through time. So, if millions of years ago, these beings were traveling around this planet on a sightseeing tour, and they were in that area, and they wanted to land, that would have been the only place to land. That may actually be one of the oldest visited spots on planet Earth. It may have historic value to the aliens, so to speak. It may be one of the oldest bases there. It may be that UFOs are landing there so frequently because of the history and the provenance of the area. And it also could be that what happened that night, May 5th of 1997, wasn't a UFO crashing, but maybe it was a UFO visiting and somebody shot at it. Is it possible that what happened there was not just a UFO crash, but some kind of a Tomahawk missile, maybe with a little depleted uranium that blew up and created this mess? Right now, we just don't know. But when we come back from this break, I have a couple things to share with you closer to home. I have a brand new UFO report, a sighting I'm going to break that happened right there in the Carolinas. And I also have an update for you on the Brown Mountain Lights. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's show is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual, and it's called Speaking of Strange. Final minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange, presented by Wright's Coin Shop. Next hour, we call the Dark 30 Hour. That's when we talk about stuff that is more controversial, sordid, and seedy. Not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. So it's up to you whether or not you want to stick around for that. Consider yourself warned. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange. And I've been telling you about my experience with this UFO crash site. I'll keep you updated as things progress and proceed. You know, it's funny. When it comes to a place that's so active, like Puerto Rico, with so much UFO phenomena, it reminds me of the old Buddhist parable of the blind men and the elephant. The story is that, you know, five blind men are put into a room with an elephant, and they all stick out a hand and fill one part of it, and then they're asked to describe what an elephant is. And you have five different descriptions. You know, one has a tail, one has a trunk, one has a tusk, etc. And it almost seems like the UFO phenomenon, especially here in Puerto Rico, is very similar. People get various glimpses of it, but nobody knows if they're all getting a different glimpse of the same creature or if there are many different creatures. Maybe there are a lot of elephants. I don't know. But that is one of the things about the paranormal. You don't know what you're researching, and that makes it even trickier to figure out what the cohesive, cogent explanation is. And we're always looking for people to give us their own little glimpse of the paranormal. And I just want to let you know, for one thing, Mobius had a report that came in that I'd like to share with you. This actually happened primarily around Greenville, South Carolina, which is approximately 1 hour's drive from Asheville. This fella is who had this experience is ex-military. He's retired and very well-trained in avionics. The email says he was driving and saw a large aircraft. He cannot ID it. It was at a 12 o'clock angle and to his right at a distance. Lighting did not allow him to see it well enough to say exactly what it was, but he said it had a large saucer-shaped disc object pop out of the contrail behind it. It says it was bright white. It actually produced a poof as it passed through the contrail behind the craft. He said it was at that moment moving behind the plane at an approximately 90-degree angle. Goes on to say, in about 10 seconds, it was out of range of sight. Very classic UFO shape. He cannot imagine any technology we own that can move that fast. So this actually apparently occurred around April the 4th. In Greenville, South Carolina. All right, so, you know, that is that anything earth-shattering? No. It's just another sighting among the millions of sightings. But whenever something like that comes in, I think, hey, who knows? If I read it on the radio, maybe somebody out there will say, oh, my God, I saw the same thing, and suddenly this one man's report turns into 100 reports from different people who got different angles, and then we can get something more comprehensive reported. So that's why every time you see something weird, if it really does strike you as being weird enough to bring to our attention, I hope that you will do it. And you can always send us emails through speakingofstrange.com. I also would like to point out here before we go to break that, you know, all these years, 20 years, I've been going up there to Brown Mountain and investigating the Brown Mountain lights. Frequently at the 181 Overlook, I would see a fellow there named Charles Braswell. Charles Braswell is a professional photographer. He was raised in that area around Brown Mountain, and he's one of those guys who has lenses on his camera that are about as big as he is. And he has he's got great credentials. He's photographed the space shuttles. I mean, he had access to go inside the shuttles from NASA and that kind of thing. Well, he has now published a new book about the Brown Mountain lights, which I think is the most comprehensive book that's ever been published on Brown Mountain. It's almost 300 pages long. It's called Are Those the Brown Mountain Lights? Now, when I got this, I was joking with Lauren that I've heard so many sort of local rednecks up there talk about seeing the Brown Mountain Lights. I think I would have given it a more authentic dialect. I would have called it Them's the Brown Mountain Lights, because that's what I've heard a lot of the rednecks say. Them's the Brown Mountain Lights.
Why they got to be rednecks? Why can't they just be good, good old mountain folks?
That's what rednecks are.
No.
No.
Are you forgetting who you're talking to, Sam?
Oh, sweet.
I'm the guy
who
made the movie Inbred Rednecks.
Who doesn't even have a copy.
No, I don't, actually. Somewhere out there. This book is called Are Those the Brown Mountain Lights by Charles Braswell, Jr. It's fantastic. I haven't even had a chance to dig into all of it, but this is a piece of history. Go to brownmountainlights.info and see how you can get a copy. There's also a link at brownmountainlights.com. When we come back, it will be time for the Dark 30 Hour. And again, you may or may not want to stick around for those news stories that, well, let's put it this way, stories that will make your mother blush. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's Speaking of Strange.